Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
It's a total disaster.
On K-Rock.
The world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ-FM. You're listening to the best of Kevin and Bean. You know all of Kevin and Bean? You know all the stuff they do? This is the best of it. They distill it down. They put it in a boiler, and they just they cook it at a high temperature, and they just get rid of all the worst, and they just collect the best.
No filler.
Good stuff. It's all meat. It's all man meat here on the Kevin and Bean Show. But we are doing live entertainment news each and every hour for you, our beloved listeners, with the Showbiz Beat. Today and this morning is no different. And I've got great news. Looks like Kid Rock's going to run for Senate.
Yeah.
Right? Kid Rock, Senator Rock. Ooh. Senator Kidd. Yeah. No word on whether this is a little marketing mojo or whether this is the real deal, but Kid Rock, a.k.a. Robert James Ritchie, now has a campaign website. And, of course, he is a big supporter of President Trump and has many conservative policies. And looks like he could, in fact, be running for U.S. Senate as a Republican out of the great state of Michigan. So let's all hope that's for real, right? We want Kid Rock and his big Smokey the Bear hat in the Senate.
He's probably going to win, too.
Of course. Of course he will. Because that's the world we live in now. It's all fading rock stars and reality show hosts. That's America. God bless it. When is... Oh, never mind.
Scott Stapp.
Yeah, I was going to say. I was going to name some other musicians who might be running for office, but why alienate people? Oh, it's just getting worse. Now the Cookie Monster's a drug dealer.
What?
Cookie Monster. Cocaine. He was busted this week in Florida. Of course he was. Of course it was Florida. There was a guy who was pulled over. Driver pulled over for having tinted windows and an obscured license plate. And that's when they smelled marijuana coming from inside the car. Uh-oh. A search turned up a backpack with a Cookie Monster doll inside. But the cop said, this Cookie Monster doll seems a little too heavy. It's a very heavy doll, and it's got a strange perforation right there, right around its neck. Well, the head comes off. And inside, police say they discovered 314 grams of cocaine stuffed inside Cookie Monster. Don't do that to Cookie. Come on. Cocaine. Emmy Award nominations are this morning. Anna Chomsky from Veep and Shamar Moore from
Criminal Minds?
Criminal Minds, thank you. They're going to be doing the job this morning, the Television Academy at the Saban Media Center in North Hollywood. This morning they're going to announce all of your favorite shows and who got nominated for what. So I promise you we are going to keep up to date on that. We will deliver that information as soon as we get it. This morning around 8 a.m., I want to say. Fox has announced that Beat Shazam has been renewed for a second season. Woo! Well, that should get some Emmys. Because they play a song and then you have to say what it is before the Shazam app. It's an app show. Jamie Foxx. Of course, one of the producers and the host of the show, he's returning. Apparently, it's been very highly rated. I can't understand how or why. Maybe it's a celebrity guest. Because of who he is, Jamie Foxx is able to pull some friends in, and Snoop Dogg's been on there, and Terrence Howard, and Odell Beckham Jr. Tonight's guest, Mariah Carey. Oh, I hope she hits one of those high notes like a dog in a bear trap and just blows Shazam apart. Today's celebrity birthdays: Patrick Stewart, 77 years old today. Harrison Ford is 75. Cheech Marin celebrates his 71st birthday. Tom Kenny, very talented actor and comedian, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, He's 55. Ken Jeong, Dr. Ken, is 48 years old today. And your Los Angeles Dodgers stud, Cody Bellinger, celebrates his 22nd birthday today. The kid's got his whole life in front of him, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
No way.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
Sounds like diarrhea to me.
K-Rock.
Every time our next guest leaves the Kevin and Bean Show, we can't wait for his return, and we are happy to say today is the day. Mr. Brad Meltzer is in studio, number one New York Times best-selling author. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
I missed you guys. I'm in face-to-face.
Now, you live in New York, right?
No, Florida. I'm from New York and now live in Florida, which is where every old Jew goes eventually from New York to Florida.
Well, we appreciate when you are in Southern California that you make some time to stop by and see us. And you were here for a number of events this week celebrating the release of your new book, the 11th book in the Ordinary People Change the World series. It just came out this past Tuesday. And anyone with little kids knows this series by now. But why don't you describe for those who don't what it's all about, Brad?
Yeah, sure. You know, I write mysteries and thrillers and I murder people on a daily basis, which is fun.
For real or just?
Both,
I see.
You know,
okay.
Naturally. And the reality was I had my own kids, and reality TV show stars and people who are famous for being famous, our kids are being fed garbage through their eyes every day. With every refresh, all of us are being fed garbage. And I just said, you know what, it's
we
enough.
Create a lot
right.
of that garbage.
And that's okay, and so do I, right? I mean, but I said, you know what, I can do better for them. I can give them better heroes than what they see, than a reality TV show star. And so we started with I'm Amelia Earhart and I Am Abraham Lincoln and launched a line of nonfiction picture book series that tell biographies of great people who they really should look up to.
For what age are you writing these books?
And,
Brad?
You know, the funny thing is for reading levels, it's usually, you know, about 5 years, 4 years old to about 10 years old. But we are like the number one baby gift that people buy now because, you know, when my son loves baseball, I did I Am Jackie Robinson for him. My daughter loves Lucille Ball. I did I Am Lucille Ball for her. And she loves our dog. She loves animals. So I did I Am Jane Goodall for her. And we did George Washington. We've done Abraham Lincoln. We've done Amelia Earhart.
You're making the rest of us that are parents look like slackers.
Well, that's it. If you don't write a line of books for your kids, it's like the child
then you're not
services
trying
comes,
to be right?
And, so, but then, and my youngest son is a creator. He loves to color. He loves art. And I said, I got to get a creator for
and
him.
And that's so, how I Am Rob Kardashian came
that's
about.
That's exactly right. And then we decided and settled on I Am Jim Henson, the creator
Jim
of
Henson.
The Muppets.
Did you ever meet Mr. Henson?
No, although here in L.A., we did an event with his daughter, and in New York, we did it with his other daughter, had the events, and they really helped with the book as we were putting it together because you can, you know, there's not many books written on Henson. There's a great biography by Brian J. Jones, but my to have the family weigh in is bananas.
Why are there not a lot of books about him?
I don't know.
I feel
like there should be more. But in fact, one of the reviews said that I Am Jim Henson is the best biography written about Jim Henson. It's written for kids, but we pour our souls into it. And the family helped us correct all these details that no one had. And I also got to ask his daughter the question that was really at the top of my mind, which was, if my dad had access to Frank Oz and Yoda, I was like, please tell me, did you steal a Yoda? Like, I need to know. Like, that's my, before we get on with the biography parts, I need to know, do you have Yoda?
And what was her answer?
She did not, but she did have a Kermit. No, I would have taken a Fozzie too, but in fact,
waka, waka.
She had a you know, Kermit's little nephew, Robin, the little tiny little frog.
Oh, that's a deep dive into the Muppet
dive.
Listen,
I only mentioned that to see who is the super nerd in the group. And none of you nodded and took that bait, which I'm really disappointed at. Because I can tell you, like, starstruck is a word, especially here in L.A., we all know what starstruck is, but mm-hmm. the feeling that you only have it with like that super level person, you know, like you meet a president and you're starstruck.
Sure.
Because you're just, the whole time you're talking, all you're thinking is you're the president. But the only time I really hit starstruck for the first time is I got to go down to Sesame Street and I walk in the door and there's Grover and Big Bird. And I'm like, be cool, baby. Be cool. Just be cool, right? And then they said to me, who do you want to see now?
Do you call yourself baby?
Yeah, no. In my internal monologue, it's
okay.
Baby and kiddo.
Okay.
And, I could have done better than kiddo. It's a PG show we're going to do today.
Right.
So I go in there, and they're like, who do you want now? And I'm like, if it's an offer, I'm like, I want Ernie. I want Bert. I want Grover. I want Cookie. I want, you know, Oscar. And then at one point, my daughter has Grover on one hand, and my son and I are working Snuffleupagus. Like, I've got Snuffleupagus's eyes, and literally,
are
it
we
was,
still talking about the same thing?
Yeah, no, turn. Exactly.
Does that sound like a euphemism?
Yeah, I was gonna. Snuffleupagus is a drug code these days.
All right, continue.
No, and that was it. No, the point is like that to me was the moment of starstruck, because what Jim Henson stands for me, when I was putting this book together, you know, listen, the Muppets and Sesame Street, they're nostalgia. But just because it was old doesn't mean it's good. And nostalgia is a trap. We all know that, right?
Right,
you make
right.
these old things and it doesn't mean they're great. But the heart of the Muppets and why I love them is when I really took that deep dive into I Am Jim Henson is what he stands for. And, you know, goodness and kindness and creating and believing and pretending, those are ideas we should never outgrow. I will never apologize for being a do-gooder. And that's what I Am Jim Henson as a book for me is to show my kids, especially today. Think of what we do today to each other. We played for the last, you know, 2 years a wonderful game. It's a horrible game. It's called Us Versus Them mm-hmm. in politics, right?
Yeah.
We rip each other's throats apart. And I was like, what I love is that when we did this book, I've gone in this, you know, in the past 2 days, I've gone from like NPR to like the Fox conservative. I had this guy who came on and said to me, he's like, looks like the cigar chomping like congressman out of an old movie. And we're going on. He's like this staunch Republican guy. And, you know, I think it's going to be a serious interview. And he leans over to me just as the TV light's about to come on. And he says, want to hear my Kermit? And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I love the
Is
idea.
Is that code? Or?
Yeah, it was drug code also.
Oh, Kevin, don't sully this conversation.
Not look, that's right. You crossed the line on the Muppets, right?
I thought, all right.
No,
how dare you?
Not
how
Jim
dare
Henson.
You?
All
right. That's the thing, right? He's sacrosanct, right? That's the thing is everyone for Jim Henson is like, no, you can't. Because we know that somehow he stands for something good.
Right.
And I love that we get to, you know, Jim Henson, when I was 5 years old, taught me that you could use your creativity when I watched Sesame Street to put good into the world. And now, here I am all these years later just trying to do exactly that, use my creativity to try and put good in the world.
Let me ask you this, Brad, and I'm intimidated a little bit because you're so eloquent, and I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to get this question out properly. But a guy like you who's been able to figure out a way to use your creativity and put good things into the world, Jim Henson did the same thing. That seems like an abstract thing to try to teach a little kid.
Yeah.
Is it a tough lesson to learn? Like, it's easy to look at Abraham Lincoln and see him as a hero and as a role model. It seems like it would be harder with somebody like Jim Henson.
You know what? It's a great question because here's why. Is when I did I Am Abraham Lincoln, it was our first book we did. And if I tell my kids that Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, my kids have no reference point for that. They don't
right.
even understand. Like, who cares? They don't understand. But I found this story about Abraham Lincoln and his true story when he was 12 years old. He loved animals, and he found a group of boys who were playing with turtles.
Kevin, God damn
no.
you to hell.
Uh-uh.
We're going to make you leave.
What?
He was, I swear to
you. He was a boy.
Out.
All
right, go ahead. Sorry, Brad.
So he's 12 years old. It was also, I had even more evil music that I played in my head right before you hit that. So he's 12 years old, Abraham Lincoln, loves animals. He goes to see, he sees a group of boys playing with turtles. And as he goes up, he races, he's all excited to go in, and he goes up to the boys. He thinks they're playing with it. They're not. What they're doing is they're putting hot coals on the backs of the turtles, torturing the turtles.
Oh.
And I don't care if you're 12 years old or you're 40 years old. Sometimes it's hard to do the right thing. But someone has to. And Abraham Lincoln in that moment as a kid says, take the coal off the turtle, save the turtles. And my son loves Abraham Lincoln today because of that story, and that cracked the code for me. To like get to your point, you can't just tell your kid be good. You got to show him the story and mm-hmm. show him how. My kid sleeps with an Abraham Lincoln doll that someone made me from I Am Abraham Lincoln because he now loves him. And so with Jim Henson, you can't just say, hey, Kermit's cute, which kids know that he is. But this one of my favorite stories in there is that when Jim Henson was little, the first job he wanted to be in television. So he goes to his local TV stations. They all reject him one after the other. He's devastated and heartbroken. And he sees a sign that he finds looking for jobs that says, we're looking for a puppeteer. So Jim Henson goes to the library, takes out a book on puppetry, goes back to the exact same station that rejected him and says, I'm a puppeteer. Will you hire me? And I want my kids to know that if there's a roadblock in your way, you go around it. If there's an obstacle there, you go around it. And my kids know that Jim Henson, Kermit just doesn't magically happen. Creativity doesn't magically happen. It comes from one thing and one thing only, hard work. And now I get to show my kids that if you want to do these things, here's how. And I realized that only by showing these famous people when they're young can kids now relate. And suddenly, these aren't the stories of famous people. This is what we're all capable of on our very best days. And that's where the whole I Am series is built upon, just that idea.
Right?
Right? Seriously.
I'm the only one applauding, but I think we're all feeling the sentiment here, Brad.
It. No,
that's beautifully put. BradMeltzer.com is the website, on Twitter @BradMeltzer. Thank you, sir.
Love you guys.
Why did we agree to do this?
Why did we agree to do anything?
I hate us.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
I hate us.
Very excited about this. Allie, I know you are too. We've been looking forward to this all day long.
It's huge. It's huge news. Everything about this is the best.
You guys think you know everything about me. You just don't. You don't know who I am.
I don't know.
You haven't lived my life. You don't pour my cereal.
These repressed memories are coming from. Like if you fell and all of a sudden you're just getting flooded with memories.
Look,
you don't pour my cereal.
It's just a way of saying you're not me. You're not me. You don't know me. You don't know me.
That's an expression.
I don't know.
You don't pour my cereal.
I feel like I've heard that somewhere. No, there's a lot of stuff you guys don't know about me. There's a lot of stuff I don't know about me. But there are times when something will spur a memory in my head.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I go, oh, yeah, I forgot. I was kicked off Romper Room.
All right, so here's,
when I
so
was
here's
a kid.
What happened. Here's what happened. A few days ago, Ralph was doing a story in the Showbiz Beat that Paris Jackson, Michael Jackson's daughter, is interested in going into acting. And we had to do a larger conversation about how healthy that is for people to be child actors and whatnot. And so out of the blue, Kevin's like, oh, yeah, I used to be on a TV show. And we were like, wait, what?
And look how well-adjusted I am.
And it turns out... And you were on Romper Room?
Yes, I was on Romper Room. I had to check with my mom because I couldn't remember,
mm-hmm.
of course. I was on Romper Room,
uh-huh.
and I got kicked off. And she also texted me that she was mortified.
How do you get kicked off Romper Room?
Look, refresh my memory on that show. Is Romper Room a show where a bunch of little kids just play in front of the camera for an hour?
Honestly, I wasn't on it that long, so I don't know. They had one of those inflatable punching toys. It's like 4 feet tall. It's sort of in the shape of a person. You punch it, but it's got the weight on the bottom of it, so it goes down to the carpet, and then it comes back up in place.
Okay.
So apparently I was just punching it and punching it and punching it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. And then...
Because you love to hit things and people. That's why.
Then there was a woman there. I remember that she was like the producer or something. She's like, you have to stop doing that. And I did it again. So she threw me off.
Let me hear a little of that Romper Room theme. Would you mind? Do we have that?
Bing bong, knock, knock, hey, daddy, do. Bing bong, tick-tock, bee-bop-boo.
Now, was there a host that you interact with? Did you play games, like in competition?
I got
do you remember
thrown
anything?
Off of the show.
That's all you remember about it.
I mean, I remember that I was like, five or six.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's never too early to be a dick, right?
That's your motto. All right. Well, let's walk into the show, and this might be a surprise to Kevin, the person who actually did pour Kevin's cereal. Kevin's mom, ladies and gentlemen, joins us here on the Kevin Beach Like K-Rock. Hello, Mrs. Kevin's mom. How are you?
Indeed, Mrs.
Well, I didn't
Kevin's
know what to
mom.
Call you. I'm sorry.
That is not my name.
No, I know it's not.
My name is Mrs. Ryder.
Mrs. Ryder,
and
okay.
And I am the Lammy's mommy.
Right. Okay. All right, so thank you for coming out.
Mom, I'd rather you didn't call me Lammy.
I could call you what
okay.
you want. You came out of my vagina.
You can.
Oh, wow.
Oh, everyone's surprised how birth works.
Well.
Everyone make a noise because someone was born.
Well, you just don't want to hear someone's mom saying the vagina word. That's
okay.
All.
Okay, I'll protect you little special ears then, okay?
Wow, your mom's a little aggressive, Kevin. So you have to help us out with the filling in the memory here.
What do you want?
I said you have to help us out with filling in this memory because Kevin only remembers a little bit about his time on Romper Room. What really happened, Mrs. Ryder?
I took Kevin to Romper Room because he was a very talented child.
Thank you, Mom.
Yes, and I said he should be in show business.
Right?
He should be in some sort of show business. That does not involve talking so much with the mouth.
Right.
And Romper Room was perfect because there's like, cute kids and they run around and do be a doobie and don't be a dumpy. And there's I see Billy, the magic mirror. I said, this was good for Kevin because it's like a special program.
I don't think
special
it,
kids.
I don't think it was for special kids. I think it was. Okay.
Trust me in this one.
All right, this was a good opportunity for you to get him out of your hair for an hour a day, too.
Yeah, so maybe they could beat some sense into him.
All right, good.
And so I take him to the television station.
Television station, right?
What?
the television station.
Go on.
Well,
go on.
I just said that.
Okay,
go on,
I apologize.
This is Kevin's mom.
And so I take him to the television station, and they put him in the fromper room, and he starts beating up on the toys.
Yeah, right. He was punching the toys.
And I said, don't you have some sort of tranquilizer dart or something that you can give him so he can be on the show? They said, no. They said, look through the magic mirror. I see Billy, I see Janie, and I see an asshole.
Mom!
And I got so upset with him. I said, that is it. I am going to leave him here for another couple hours, and that'll teach you. And they said, no, you won't. And so they said, he has to come back to your home. And I said, oh, really? And so we put the leash on him, and we took him back.
Oh,
and we
leash.
Put him.
I don't remember a leash,
there
Mom.
There was a leash. And because you would run away otherwise.
All right.
No. We had one of those harnesses that you put on, like a feral cat.
Of course, yes.
Or some sort of wild animal. And we put it on you so that you couldn't, you know, bite the other children or run away.
Just sound safe, yeah.
And so then we put him in the back of the station wagon, and we put his helmet on, and we
come
said,
on,
he had a helmet.
Oh yeah, oh big helmet. He had to have a big. He has a big head.
Huge head.
Oh, you talk about pain. All right, not only we get into the birth.
We don't
oh,
need
no.
to get back to that if you don't mind. I'd rather
and,
not.
And then I took him home, and he said, "Mom, you poured my cereal." And I said, I'll do better than that. I'll pour your orange juice.
Oh, no. Yes. No.
I like orange juice.
He loved orange juice.
Thank you. Grape juice?
No, he didn't like grape juice.
Tomato juice?
No, he didn't like tomato juice.
Orange juice.
Yeah. And then he spit the orange juice all over the place.
That sounds about right.
I put the leash back on. You should see what he does with strawberry ice cream.
Oh, no.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show.
They're all doing great. Except for Kevin.
K-Rock.
Time for our feature, People Are Dumb.
And I'm going to start with the how does the story end?
Okay. Oh, love it.
Man in Ohio named Timothy Blake, 28, walked into a Walmart with a syringe filled with blank and started spraying it on women.
Oh, I know what it is.
At the Walmart.
Oh. All right. Was he trying to get the women pregnant? Because that'll go a
thinking.
Long way toward guessing what's in the syringe.
They asked him, and he claimed the white substance in question was egg yolks mixed with flour.
Oh, no.
But that's what he wanted them to think, though, right?
He said he learned to make that on the internet.
Oh, geez.
But then he later admitted that it was his own
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
He was spraying semen on people with a...
Come on.
With a needle in a
Why
Walmart.
Why would you share that story? Why would you look at that and go, hey, you know what the breakfast audience needs? Is that story.
Dumb.
Here's a guy. Everybody in this story is suspect. I don't even understand what's happening with most of them. You know how you go to a show and you park your car, and then you come outside and you can't find your car?
Sure. It happens, sure.
In June, a man borrowed a friend's BMW in Scotland.
Okay.
He borrowed his BMW in Scotland. He drove south to Manchester, England to catch a Stone Roses concert at Etihad Stadium.
I like this guy.
He parked the vehicle in one of the area parking garages. After the concert, he searched and could not find the car. He says he spent 5 days looking for the car and couldn't find it.
I mean, the only way that works, because at some point, most of the cars file out of there and there are very few left and you can see your own car.
Right.
Unless he was at the wrong parking garage.
But you, in 5 days, you could look at every parking garage in a 4 mile radius.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a Stone Roses fan. Maybe it was towed after one day.
Oh, that's possible.
Yeah.
So that was June. Okay. Now, in August...
Come on.
In August.
Is he still walking around Manchester?
No.
The owner of the car emailed local companies and government to see if it had been found. So the guy borrowed it in June, couldn't find it, went back to Scotland. The owner didn't really care at that point until August.
All very suspect.
And then he's
suspect.
Like, hey, you know what? It's been 2 months.
Right.
Where's my car?
Hey, my car should have been found by now. So he calls him and finds out. Now, officers say that they happened on the abandoned car in one of the area lots just before midnight that night that the guy called. And they said, oh, this must have been the car that was lost since June. We can't imagine what the ticket must have been, said the officer. And they tweeted that they had found the car in this lot.
And so it had been there the whole time.
Yes, but in what world would a police officer not call the guy back who had emailed them? They tweeted it just out to the general public.
Yeah.
We found a BMW in an area parking lot. Does anybody know who it belongs to?
Yeah, I'm with you. This is shaky.
There's no one in this story can be believed, right?
Yeah, a lot of people not making sense here.
Dumb.
Man suspected of having sex with a van. Now, how do you do that, Bean?
Well, I mean, tailpipe.
Tailpipe, right. A man in Dayton, Ohio is facing indecency charges after a witness reported him attempting to have sex with a van parked on the street. Officers responded
to even his own car. Somebody else's,
yeah.
Oh, that's disrespectful.
But it's hotter when you do somebody else's.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
makes it dirty.
Right. Officers responding to a call Tuesday found him, 35-year-old Michael Henson, blacked out on the front lawn. They got him up. Apparently, he was put into the back of the squad car. He talked to the woman who made the call to the police who saw the man having sex with the van. She said she saw him pull down his shorts and then put his genitals into the front grill.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that coming.
Front grill. That seems bad, right? I mean, I know that we're trying to make a distinction between which part of the car to have sex with.
Right.
That is what we're doing right
now. But tailpipe, front grill?
Yeah, I don't. No comparison there.
There's no comparison there. And finally, this one is for Bean.
Dumb.
How long has your nose been running, Bean? How long have you been sick and not gone to the doctor?
Just since last Thursday, so we're what? Day seven now.
Yeah.
Okay, but Bean is, he'll have it for another 2 weeks before he'll even consider going to the doctor. Here's a man named Joe Nagy, whose nose ran, it wouldn't stop running for about a year and a half.
Okay.
All right, well, that's a problem.
At first, he said, oh, it's allergies. It's just allergies. And that happens, and people with allergies learn to just deal with the fact that your nose is going to run, and that's part of allergies. After realizing the allergy medication was having no effect, that's when he went to a doctor. And a doctor diagnosed the problem fairly soon afterwards. The membrane surrounding Joe's brain had a hole in it, and his brain fluid was leaking out of his nose.
All right.
Yay!
Did you guys know that was even a possibility?
No, please. No, please.
His brain fluid.
That can't be good for the brain. The brain must need that fluid.
I was reading further. It says the body produces about 12 ounces of fluid per day to keep your brain going.
Uh-huh.
And his was constantly leaking for 18 months before he finally went in and had it fixed.
So permanent damage, or is he okay?
He's okay.
Wow.
But I'm just saying, Bean, you know, maybe if it's been a week or 8 days,
wait a year. Yeah.
Wait a year and go see somebody about
it. And then you'll find out that it's what you thought it was.
Dumb.
Radio.com. It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Lame.
We really want to hear from you if you have ever had or currently have a job as a Hollywood personal assistant. Hazel, she is up first on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hazel, glad you're listening. Glad you called. What's going on?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Kevin and Bean. So I used to work for a 6-time Grammy-winning artist, Pepe Aguilar. He's a mariachi singer.
Okay.
And, you know, I thought it was going to be super glamorous, but, I mean, it literally was me having to drive to McDonald's to get his frappuccinos.
That's awesome. That's awesome from his standpoint. I need a cappuccino. Be gone with you.
That doesn't sound like terrible work. I mean, there are lots of people whose job involves them jumping in a car and running across town to run an errand, right?
Yeah, totally. And, I mean, that wasn't even the worst part. There was times when I would have to buy him a motorcycle like super last minute and have it somehow flown out to Zacatecas, Mexico for Christmas.
What?
And had to deal with customs forms, and his mariachis were always pissed off, so they were always coming to me asking about their tax forms because like, you can never trust Latinos.
You do not want angry mariachis on your ass.
You've said it for years,
Kevin.
That
is not something you want.
No, that is, it is well known that that is a cutthroat injury, right? Man. It is every mariachi player for himself.
They will take you out.
So, I apologize that I am unfamiliar with Mr. Aguilar's work, but I mean, was he super rich from playing the accordion or something?
Accordion?
Or whatever he plays. No. I don't know what
he's
plays.
He's in a mariachi band.
Right, but they also have accordions. That is a musician in a mariachi band. So was he like super well off?
He came from super like Mexican Hollywood royalty. His dad used to act alongside John Wayne.
Oh, okay. So he had money. He had money to start out with even.
Yeah, he had money to start out with, and he was a total rocker dude with, like, full arm sleeve tattoos. He was also the tallest Mexican I've ever seen in my life.
Okay, that's quite a category.
He's 6'5" with a sombrero.
That's pretty sweet. Hey. That's pretty sweet.
That's a good look.
Was it worth it? Did you get paid enough that it was worth it?
Hell no, I did not get paid enough. I have a birthday. Right,
take it easy. I was just asking.
Did you get to go to any celebrity parties?
Yeah, I mean, I got to, you know, hang out at the, I went to the Univision parties. I got to go to backstage and kind of see how the music industry works from an actual working perspective. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I love the music world, and that's kind of why I did it.
Is mariachi the music world?
Yes, of course it's the music world. Very legitimate form. You know, all right, that's what I meant.
Mariachis matter too, guys.
Amen.
Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you.
Hey, Zell.
Let's go to Pamela.
Hey, Pamela, what's up?
Hi, guys.
Hi. So you were a personal assistant?
Back in the day, to an A-list.
Now, we were guessing that it all whether it's a good job or a bad job all depends on the caliber of the person you're working for. How is your celebrity?
True. I mean, obviously, you know, it is the person. But it doesn't matter who the person is. You will lose your life. And you will have to literally spoon feed every actual action to that person.
Oh, because it's a 24/7 thing. You're never off.
Yeah, you're never off. You have no life. $70,000 is not enough.
I can see that.
It's the assistants that build this industry. So the only thing I will say is, though, it builds you up for, I'm a line producer now. Builds you up to know it's boot camp. It's boot camp for knowing how everything works. And a 24/7 type of job.
So it's a pretty good way to get into the industry then, because you do make contacts just by virtue of the job that you do.
Yes, and also just dealing with the fact that you always have to be on and you always have to think ahead and you always have to, you know, be at the support for some very special people that work in this industry, which will never end.
Right.
So it's totally worth it.
That's what you're...
A lot of hand-holding. All right, before we let you go, and we appreciate you calling, was there anything that sticks in your mind as you thought it was a crazy or insulting or embarrassing or unpleasant thing that you had to do for your celebrity?
Hand-washing underwear.
Wow!
All right, Pamela, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. Let's go to Calabasas, line 3. This is going to be Larkin up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. She was a celebrity personal assistant, and she's willing to name names.
Yeah, I worked for Tom and Roseanne back in their heyday. Like,
Tom Arnold and Roseanne Barr.
Do you remember what were they paying you back then, and was it worth it?
Well, I was just like in my mid-20s, and it wasn't a ton, but they gave us a lot of bennies. You know, it was like my first cool cell phone I could take home, and they gave us some cash on the side. And Tom was pretty cool at times. You know, if I was going to buy, like, if he wanted a tent that he was never going to use, he would say, yeah, pick up one for yourself, Larkin. So that was kind of cool. There was some cool stuff.
Well, at least you got a free tent out of it.
Was that one of the Bennies?
You'd never say Benny again, Larkin.
Larkin, did you ever get one of those infamous calls that we see in TV movies where the celebrity is out of his mind, drunk or high, and calls you at 4 a.m. and asks you to do something crazy for him?
You know, at the time, honestly, we had like a restraining order. We couldn't say squat about what we were saying because, you know, the National Enquirer would call our house. And
right.
They were hot right then, and they wanted anything they could get. But, you know, some of the funny ones I got, there were some ones I shouldn't tell about Tom. He was telling people, I'm not eating carbs. I'm not on carbs. And he'd call me at 11:30 at night. I need 4 baked potatoes. I want them brought to the set. And don't tell anybody. And don't tell Rosie. You know how to get
That's awesome. I want to be able to get somebody to bring me baked potatoes at 11:30 at night. That sounds great.
It's totes of Benny.
He could eat a potato like a small apple. He would just bury that thing.
We're learning a lot today.
He would just bury that thing.
I kind of want Larkin to be my assistant.
Larkin, you're the best, but stop saying Benny's, all right?
All right, let's go to your friend Cheryl, Kevin. She's on Line 5 calling from Los Angeles. Let's see what she's talking about.
Hey, Cheryl.
Hi there.
You were a personal assistant for?
I was helping out with the roast of Mr. Rob Lowe, who was my idol as a child. I had, you know, pictures all over my bedroom of him. I had met him before he got lost. When I used to work at a studio, so I had helped him in the past.
All right.
And I was one of four people that got fired in a day from him for making him walk 5 steps out of his way. And that was after he wouldn't come out of his trailer for getting until he had his triple espresso.
Uh-oh.
With a side of half and half. And then after he fired me, they had the nerve to come up and ask me to get him another triple espresso.
Well, he needed it still. Just because he fired you doesn't mean he doesn't need his espresso.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on. Get it together, Cheryl.
What kind of personal assistant are you?
The Kevin and Bean Show mornings on K-Rock.
Sounds kind of boring.
Hey, guys, what's up with Florida?
You goddamn people in Florida! You bunch of bastards!
Florida. What's up with Florida? You always have the craziest news. What's up with you? Florida. What's up with Florida? Let's all find out what happened now in Florida.
We have discovered over the years doing this Kevin and Bean show that Florida is the wackiest state, and they rarely disappoint. And it's another really, really good batch.
And by the way, not just by a little bit.
Yeah.
They destroy the other 49 states.
They sure do. And Kevin, I thought of you with this first story. You know, every once in a while, there's a time in your life where you go, what am I doing? How am I living? You know, maybe you're locked out in your garage naked.
Sure.
Or it's another day in the Zero Club. And you just think, this is no way to live a life. Well, I think that's what's going on with this young man. His name is Stephen Charles Kirkland. He's in a lot of trouble down there in St. Petersburg, Florida. The other morning, he broke into a home and startled a sleeping woman inside. She woke up on her couch and found him standing over her, dressed as SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yes.
She was startled. He ran out the door. 20 minutes later, he was seen at another place in the neighborhood looking through the window of a home where a woman was getting dressed for work. She saw him, called police. By the way, he's terrible at peeping because he keeps getting caught.
A, yes. B, don't you try and blend in a little bit?
I would think so.
Why
are you wearing a SpongeBob costume?
Because meth.
Well, maybe so, yes. So she jumps up. He leaves and runs away, and the police are called, and they are in pursuit of him, and he tries unsuccessfully to hide in a trash can where he was actually pulled out of and arrested. And that's the Kevin moment in this story, when he's hiding in a trash can dressed as SpongeBob SquarePants at 7:30 in the morning. He has to be thinking, am I making all the right choices here?
I'd like to object to the use of the word the Kevin moment, if you don't mind.
Mr. Kirkland apparently was already wanted for 2 counts of lewd and lascivious behavior from back in January. He's also a suspect in an indecent exposure case in Bay Vista Park that same day, January 22nd. He's making a lot of poor choices is what I'm saying, so I hope he gets his act together. We go to Tallahassee up next. Here's a Florida woman who is suing a popular Mexican restaurant after she claims she was injured falling off a donkey statue.
Right? How many times has that happened?
Her name is Kimberly Bond. She is seeking damages in excess of $15,000 related to an incident on August 31st at the El Jalisco restaurant in Tallahassee. The lawsuit was filed this month where she claims she was climbing on the life-size donkey statue to have her picture taken, which the restaurant, in the words of her attorney, permitted and encouraged when she slipped off the back, fell on the floor, and suffered significant injuries, including a fractured spine.
Oh, my God.
Now, Kevin, you be the judge here. Whose fault is it if I'm in your Mexican restaurant and I climb up on the donkey
That's
in the lobby
you.
And fall off?
It's on you.
I would think so, too.
Except for... You said the management said go ahead and do it?
Well, what her attorney is claiming is that the restaurant permitted and encouraged people to get on the donkey to get their photos taken.
Yeah, I still feel like that's on her.
According to the lawsuit, the restaurant was negligent in creating the hazard without adequate safety features, determining whether the statue was slippery or failing to warn customers about the dangers involved in climbing on the statue. I'd be willing to bet any amount of money there's liquor involved here, by the
way,
and that's why she fell off. The lawsuit, which seeks a jury trial, claims that the woman suffered bodily injury resulting in pain and suffering and disability and disfigurement and mental anguish and loss of capacity for the enjoyment of life, expense of hospitalization, medical and nursing care, loss of earning. It just goes on and on and on and on and on from just jumping up on a donkey.
Wow.
What's up with that? Here's a here's a story from the Bradenton Herald in Florida. This is one of the most bizarre things. I wish there were video of this. A guy is in Florida and sees an alligator, which, by the way, is not uncommon. It's bizarre how many alligator stories come out of Florida. I mean, they live in a place where alligators just roam through their yards and across their golf courses, and it's just the cost of doing business living down
there. Yeah, that's a thing. It's fine.
It's just a thing, right. He sees an alligator who somehow has snatched a bird out of the sky, Kevin.
Wow.
It's a bald eagle. And he says...
That's a baller alligator.
Yes, it is. He says it was his patriotic duty, this man. It's a bald eagle. It's a national treasure. It stands for who we are and what we are. He jumps into the lake and wrestles with the alligator to pull the eagle out of the gator's mouth. He's wearing a cowboy hat and camouflage shorts, by the way, as he does this. This is so Florida and so America, isn't it? He pulls the eagle out of the alligator's mouth. Now, I have to wonder, just because he was so moved by the fact that this was our national symbol, if it's a pigeon, does he just not jump in?
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, it's just because it's an apple, right?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, there was too much damage done to the eagle. Its legs were rendered useless, and it had been cut in the throat by the alligator. So he did take it to the vet, and it had to be euthanized because of its injuries. But he did the best he could. He said he just couldn't watch America's symbol die. And finally, and I think you'll enjoy this story very much, this looks like a classic case of a guy coming home drunk in the middle of the night and getting into an argument with and shooting his girlfriend. Unfortunately, well, or maybe fortunately, depending, he says that's not what happened. Here's the news report from Fox TV.
The 25-year-old who lives in this home tells police his dog Diesel was the shooter.
Okay, so it wasn't me. I didn't shoot my girlfriend. It was my dog.
He's got a pretty good shot.
His girlfriend tells police she was asleep when it happened.
So this is, they go to the neighbor to find out what she thinks about her neighbor's story about the dog shooting the girlfriend.
Right.
This neighbor did not have the man's back.
Bogus.
What makes you say that?
A dog can't fire a gun.
Come on, have my back. You're my neighbor.
No, are you crazy?
You don't know, man.
Yeah, but to have his back, you have to admit that the dog fired the gun.
Why are you just automatically assuming my story is bogus and the dog didn't shoot the lady? Come on.
That's crazy.
It might sound like an extreme version of my dog ate my homework, but that's what 25-year-old Brian Murphy says happened. He told police he brought his dog Diesel back into the bedroom after a late night walk when he saw a flash and heard a bang. He told JSO he believes Diesel jumped on the nightstand where his gun was sitting and it went off.
Come on, Kevin, why are you laughing? That's a very reasonable story. Let's see what the neighbor thinks.
Shooting his girlfriend in the leg.
Have you seen a dog fire a gun? In a cartoon, maybe.
All right. Sounds like she's not buying the story. So we'll have to wait and find out what the jury or judge determines on that case. And this has been What's Up with Florida.
Florida, Florida, Florida. What's up with Florida?
Bitter, predictable, whining disc jockeys. It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Ralph brought us news during the Showbiz Beat that there was going to be a public memorial for the beloved mother-daughter duo of Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds, who died within a few days of each other recently. And for fans of them, there's going to be a memorial March 25th, and it's going to be at the Forest Lawn Cemetery, Hollywood Hills. And he brought that news and then was mentioning that he would never go to something like that. And he was kind of surprised by a lot of people who do. And these public memorials have been very popular. We talked about it yesterday about how, you know, they filled up the Staples Center, I think, for Michael Jackson Memorial after he died. And a lot of times people will go because they're fans of somebody.
Yeah, he was asking all of us in the room, would you go, would you go, would you go? To any, really, to any celebrity's memorial.
Yeah. Memorial, yeah.
And Bean was the outlier here. It's hard to believe. Yeah. But Bean would not only go to public memorials, but perhaps private funerals. as well.
And I feel like it wasn't until the discussion of hearing him say that he read about it in a newspaper. Who was it again, Bean?
It was the great R&B singer and songwriter Charles Brown.
So you read what essentially was a funeral announcement, and you took that as an invitation to go.
Well, I mean, it was open. I mean, the church was open. Anyone could just drive
over. The
door
was open.
And walk in and sit down.
It wasn't open, though. You get that, right?
Well, I don't know that for a fact.
But they don't lock the doors if it's a private funeral.
No, I know that.
Because nobody else is trying to get in.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't have any reason to suspect that it was not open to the public, that anyone couldn't come. I still don't know that was the case.
Okay, let me just clarify that for you. All of them are not open to the public unless they say open to the public. It's pretty easy.
Okay, so I'm confused now.
So about what?
I'm confused.
So you went to Chris Brown's funeral.
Charles. All right, hold on. Why don't we start right now? Because yesterday you had a lot of trouble with this, too. Charles Brown is a legendary singer-songwriter, popular in the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s. And the reason I love Charles Brown, the reason he's my main man, is that he wrote two of the greatest Christmas songs of all time, including...
Bells will be ringing, the glad, glad news.
So he wrote that one.
Great
and then
song.
As if that weren't enough, he wrote this one.
Merry Christmas, baby.
Come on.
Yeah, okay.
Charles Brown.
Fine. But listen, here's the thing. There's a difference between really, really liking someone's work and then going to their funeral where you weren't invited. I mean, that's odd.
But I mean, was I not invited?
You were not invited.
Or was it in the paper saying Charles Brown's funeral is going to be on this date and this church?
I feel like that was just an announcement of the funeral. It wasn't an invitation to the public.
Look, my dad unfortunately passed away about eight years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody that I didn't know had shown up to the funeral, I don't know. I feel like I would have punched him.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's a personal thing.
Wouldn't have been hurting anything or even getting involved. They literally just would have been sitting in a pew just watching.
It's a personal thing. I don't want people to sit there and watch my pain and my family's pain. That's
grieving
weird.
Is very personal,
right?
But isn't it different though that this was a celebrity with a fan base and the people
did it
who
say
were...
everyone welcome?
Well,
did
I don't
it
think
say
it
public
specifically
public
that,
memorial?
But I'm just saying, wasn't I doing what everybody else in the church was doing, which was to pay a reflection on the man's life and to mourn him and to miss him?
I'm going to suggest that everybody else in that church knew him.
Mm-hmm.
Knew him personally as a person.
All right, let's take some calls. Why don't we try Beth? She's in Pasadena. Let's see what she's got to say on line three, please.
Hey, Beth.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Allie.
Hi.
Just so you know, Allie, usually I agree with you on everything.
Well, you sound bright.
But
this time, I have to agree with Bean. If it was a public funeral, I mean, I'm a big Michael Jackson fan, and when he passed away, it was so sad.
Right.
But I used to have to drive by Forest Lawn to get to work every day, and there'd be all these people standing around at his funeral, and it's just like, you're just one in a million there. You're not like a real fan. But if you could find a way to get into the private funeral of someone you really like, I think that I'm all for it.
If you could find a way to get into a private funeral, Beth likes you, Allie.
Beth, I feel like maybe that's the height of disrespect. You're infringing on their family and their friends just so you can be a part of something that you're truly not.
Like, how was I infringing, though? Again, I just walked in.
Because everybody in the room knew Charlie Brown. And
Charles
didn't.
Brown.
Charles Brown, whoever. And you didn't.
I just sat there and minded my own business and
silently
wished him well. And then, of course, walked by the open casket on the way out.
Dear
Lord.
Did you have to caress his face, though, as you walked by the casket?
A light kiss on the cheek. That was kind of creepy.
Right?
Let's go to James, line two, please. Thank you for calling. Thank you for holding. What say you?
I just wanted to call in and point out that was probably more of a public announcement to alert friends, maybe even estranged family members that were out of contact with him.
Right. How about people who bought all his records?
Probably not. More
no?
just of an announcement, not an invitation. Just letting people who might not be in contact with family members organizing the funeral that this man has passed come pay your respects.
Okay.
So, James, let's say that you read that about Bobby Brown, and then he had a funeral.
Charles Brown. Bobby Brown is still alive.
Whoever. And then you decided to go to the funeral. Would that feel weird to you?
In my opinion, I would be sitting there horrified of the moment that somebody comes up to me and says, hey,
right.
How did you know this man? Or can you speak of an experience you had? And then you're just sitting there wiggling your thumbs going, well, I own that vinyl. Like,
I like your impression. It's
I like your dumb guy impression. That's pretty sweet.
All right, sir. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Let's go to line 7, please. Amy's in Riverside. She's got a difference of opinion.
Hi, guys. I'm totally team Bean on this one. I feel like if it's in the paper, it's to let everybody know that this happened and come pay your respects if you feel that you need to. And I feel like, Kevin, like you had mentioned with your father, you couldn't possibly have known everybody that your father knew. So if a stranger walked into the funeral and said, well, I know your father from bingo on Wednesday nights, you would still punch him in the face? I feel like that's why.
Yeah, because my dad never played bingo.
That you know of.
And that would
that
be,
you know of.
That would be a sure sell tie.
What if he was in a secret bingo club?
He ran it?
Like, yes.
So underground bingo club?
So, Amy, you're saying once they put it in the paper, then it becomes public.
That's what I think.
You're crazy like Bean. I mean, I'm sorry. You're insane.
Patriots are going down, Allie. Patriots are going down.
Okay.
See,
all
Amy's
right. It just got weird.
Nuts. Obviously, right. Amy.
Thank
is
you
nuts.
For the call.
This is a scattered group of people.
It really is, and I love them.
Let's go to line 6, Lawndale. How about this? How about Paul, who is a funeral director?
Oh.
Now, is he the one to give us the definitive answer on if I misunderstood the wording in the newspaper?
It depends on whose side he's on.
And as much as it pains me so horribly, Bean is kind of in the right here.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. You're breaking up.
Paul's fine. He sounds fine. All right, go on, please.
Well, when they make announcements like that.
Kevin, quit screwing with his phone line. Let him talk.
I'm not doing anything. You know how phone signals are.
Let him talk. All right, go ahead.
As much as Bean is in the right, if they make an announcement, any kind of announcement whatsoever, unless they specifically say for family only, usually, it means that they want everybody who wants to celebrate that
life. Boom.
His phone's cutting out.
Even though Kevin is trying to screw with your phone, I got the message, which is they would say it's private if it's private, right? That's what you're saying, Paul.
I feel like private
Paul
is
just
implied.
It's I just, do, too.
It's just unwritten because who are you?
Paul, by the way, was a funeral director. He was the answer
it's
to this question.
A little suspect, right?
And you had nothing.
Paul, the funeral director?
Right? Come on.
Right.
Like any funeral director is named Paul.
All right. Well, look, we're going to leave it there. But
hold
I
on.
Think...
I have a tweet, if you don't mind. Bean, I'd like to
sure,
add with.
Of course.
So let me get this straight. Bean will go to a celeb's funeral uninvited, but RSVPs no to friends' weddings.
That's great.
And your point is?
The point is you're all f***ed up.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
Just not funny, K-Rock.
Best of Kevin and Bean, but we're bringing you live showbiz news each and every hour with the Showbiz Beat. I also have tickets coming up in the next hour for Nick Offerman, who's going to be performing at UCLA. And we'll be talking about Shia LaBeouf, also new music from Kesha. You're going to want to hear that. And I was going to talk about Kid Rock, who says he's got a major announcement coming soon, probably about his run for U.S. Senate. And then I see my buddy Kevin Smith is calling me on the phone. He also has a major announcement. I think Kevin Smith might be running for public office.
Kevin Smith running at all is never going to happen.
All right, walking, strolling for
there
public office.
If I'm doing anything, it's sitting and watching TV for public office.
What's up, my buddy?
How are you, sir?
I'm well. I'm well.
You're large and in charge. This is like risky business.
I know. The parents are away. I just hope I don't get a crack in that egg.
Are you in pants or not?
I am pantless, sir.
That's the way to do it.
Y'all are.
We're all, It's Pantless Thursday here on the Kevin and Bean Show. What's going on, buddy? I know we have Hollywood Babylon tomorrow night at 10 p.m. at the Improv on Melrose. We're inviting people to come out and see us for that.
I'm doing a show tonight before that.
Tonight?
At Largo.
Oh, that's a cool space.
It's a very cool space. I'm putting together my next evening with Kevin Smith stand-up special for shooting. So I'm going to go there and kind of work it out, kind of put together the test the piece out before we put it in front of cameras.
How awesome. So that's tonight. What time at Largo?
Tonight at 8:30 at Largo, right on, what is that on?
Fairfax.
Fairfax. Is that right?
I think so.
La Cienega.
Oh, La Cienega. My bad. It used to be on Fairfax. Now it's on La Cienega. It's not sending people to the wrong place.
Me by myself. And then the next night, you come to the Improv, and it'd be me and Ralph. Yeah. And you'll see me with a funny person. If so you could compare and contrast me by myself and how not funny I am, me with Ralph.
Not true at all. If you've ever seen Kevin and any of his evenings with... they're available on DVD, and they're on television all the time. It's just wildly entertaining. The guy's a great storyteller, and it's a great chance to see him tonight at Largo on La Cienega. How do people get tickets, Kev, if they want to come out?
They can jump over to csmod.com and grab a ticket, or the Largo website, of course. Hey, man, have you been talking about the Shia LaBeouf thing?
Oh, man, is he a mess or what?
That's crazy, dude. Like, at one point in one of the videos, like, he literally threatens a cop's life. If I had a gun,
Yeah, I'd blow your ass up.
I didn't think he could do that sort of stuff without, you know, going to jail.
I didn't think he could do that kind of stuff without getting his ass beaten. But I think because of the body cams now, they don't want to rough anybody up. But he's lucky he didn't get smacked around because...
You are so not kidding, dude. And it might have had something to do with the fact that they were driving in a car that at any moment could have turned into an Autobot. Maybe that's why everyone stayed in line.
Right.
Like, we don't know if this is one of those Decepticons or Autobots.
If Bumblebee pulls up behind them, then they're all in big trouble.
And he starts playing pop culture songs to express himself.
But it didn't stop in the car, Kevin. I don't know if you saw the most recent footage of him at the station.
No.
He is saying to one guy, your wife's at home right now probably watching Black Sea porn, and she doesn't think you're big enough. And
holy cow.
Then he told
man.
A black cop who was booking him that he's going to hell because he's black.
It was weird because the videos I saw, they didn't seem overtly racist, but he kept, like, comparing himself, going, you're putting one of your own in jail. I couldn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
What do you think that is? Booze or booze plus some drug that I don't know?
I think booze.
Just booze? Because he sounded very, like, all the words were eloquently put together. He wasn't stuttering.
That's true. He wasn't slurring.
Slurring or anything like I don't know, man, but I was like, whatever that drug is, keep it away from me.
He just released his apology, by the way. I don't know if you saw it or not online.
Well, I would hope so. What did he say?
I am deeply ashamed of my behavior and make no excuses for it. I don't know if these statements are too frequent or not shared often enough, but I am certain that my actions warrant a very sincere apology to the arresting officers, and I'm grateful for their restraint. The severity of my behavior is not lost on me. My outright disrespect for authority is problematic, to say the least, and completely destructive, to say the worst. It is a new low, a low I hope is a bottom. I've been struggling with addiction publicly for far too long. I am actively taking steps towards securing my sobriety and hope I can be forgiven for my mistakes.
Wow, that's pretty thorough. He's covered every base.
Yeah, so we'll see if it's just lip service.
I saw him interviewed once, I guess, on, I don't know if it was Letterman or Conan or Leno back in the day, but he told... he told the story of some time he disrupted the public by being drunk. And he seemed to have all his faculties and kind of be able to play it off. Not like, excuse it, because he was still very guilty about it, he said. But, you know, kind of telling it in an entertaining, like, I can't believe I did this sort of way. I don't know if you could do that with this version, though.
No, you're not bouncing back from this. This is a PR disaster and a career disaster. Unless he actually gets some help and maybe he gets sober, we'll have to wait and see.
Might be time to go to rehab.
It might be. For me, too. Maybe I'll join him there. Listen, tonight at Largo, break a leg, brother.
I'll see you tomorrow night at Improv, my brother, where you will break a leg.
All right, sir. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
See you, buddy. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. If I can find that list.
Chip.
Where is it? Damn it! Thanks, Chip. Patrick Stewart is 77 years old today. Harrison Ford celebrates his 75th birthday. Cheech Marin is 71. Tom Kenny, voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, is 55 years old. Ken Jeong, Dr. Ken himself, 48 years old today. Sharon Horgan from Catastrophe. It's a great show if you're not watching it over there on Amazon. 47 years old today. And Cody Bellinger from the Los Angeles Dodgers celebrates his 22nd birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Radio.com.
Not doing good so far.
So far.
The Kevin and Bean Show.
You're not doing good.
On K-Rock. K-Rock.
Roger Logan is in the news. Maybe you've seen his picture. He made the news because he had a 140-pound tumor in his stomach.
140 pounds. I weigh 185.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
is like
almost
walking,
a me-sized tumor.
Walking around with a whole nother person. He is a 57-year-old man who runs an antique store in Gulfport, Mississippi. And the tumor happened about 5 years ago. And I mentioned when we were talking about this story coming up that I have many questions. First of all is, how does it get to 140 pounds before you can get it taken care of? Doesn't it seem like that's the type of thing that you would find a guy who would help you?
I would think embarrassment, maybe.
I mean,
maybe.
Well, you'll hear in this news piece from KERO Bakersfield that he was told by more than one doctor that he was just getting fat. Now, I don't know anything about medicine, but a doctor ought to be able to tell the difference between somebody who's just gaining weight and somebody who has a tumor, I would think. Didn't it just feel like some sort of a scan would have revealed that?
You would think so, yeah.
All right, let's hear what's going on. Here he is in the hospital room after the surgery.
No, this isn't home for 57-year-old Roger Logan.
Usually at home, I have to sit and it rests on the floor.
Home is in Mississippi.
By the way, Kevin has said that many times before. But this is a guy talking about his tumor.
It rests on the floor.
Rests on the floor, yeah.
Home is in Mississippi, where Logan spent majority of his time confined to a reclining chair in an 8-foot room due to growth protruding from his abdomen.
Never.
What?
Never leaving that room, never leaving that chair.
Going years with doctors only telling him this.
You're just fat. It's just fat. It's just words developing.
It wasn't just fat.
Okay.
How many doctors go, you know what? You're just fat.
I don't think he was going to doctors.
I don't either.
There's no way.
You think he was just, see, this is why I have so many questions. You think he was like literally just calling people on the phone and going, yeah, I'm getting so big. And they're like, well, don't eat so much. And then he would hang up. I mean, did he never go to a doctor?
There's no way a doctor missed a 140-pound tumor that rests on the ground.
Not only that, if you're, quote, just fat, they would usually give you ways to maybe lose some of the weight.
Right.
They don't just say you're just fat, have a good day.
And it grew over 5 years. So look, maybe when you start getting a little paunch, you go, oh, I guess I need to cut back. Because looks like he was a big dude to begin with. But then once it gets to be 20 pounds and 40 pounds and 60 pounds, any moron, I'm sorry, Mr. Logan, but any moron would realize there's something else going on here. Wait till you hear why he got a tumor, which is why this headline caught our attention, by the way. That's coming up.
But a benign tumor, likely caused by an ingrown hair.
Stop! How about a little more information on how that happened?
Caused by an ingrown hair.
Ingrown hair.
On his stomach? Because that's where the tumor is?
The growth.
No, the growth of the hair was on the back. For some reason, it just grew on the stomach.
I swear to God, Kevin. I swear to God.
There's going to be fisticuffs.
Right?
This continues. The growth most likely started as an ingrown hair that became infected, said the man, the doctor who eventually did the surgery.
Oh.
Then it swelled. Now, here's the part. God, I need some help on this. Then it swelled and developed its own blood supply.
What?
What does that mean?
Means 2 more months, he's got a whole nother person.
Right?
Yes, it developed its own blood supply.
Who's hungry?
So, an ingrown hair, how does it turn? Right?
I'm with you, no.
The growth increasing rapidly in size and weight. 130 pounds alone, hanging from Logan's midsection.
From here up, I was a normal person.
Right.
But I used to equate it to just put a strap around your neck and carry 3 bags of cement around with you all day long, just swinging and...
After months of research, Logan said no more.
It just keeps getting bigger.
Bringing him here to Memorial Hospital in the hands of Dr. Dev.
By the way...
Was that Dr. Death?
I thought it was Dr. Death the first time I heard it. No, it's Dr. Dev. Thank God it's not Dr. Death. So after months of research. He finally decided 140 pounds was enough.
What does that mean, research? Was he online?
I assume so. He's like, you know what? I was willing to put up with this at 100 pounds.
Right?
But 140, now it's getting in the way. Allie, I always ask you, what's up with newscasters? I hate this lady so much. Why does she talk like that?
Why do all newscasters suck?
That voice, it's the worst.
What is that about?
It's the worst.
Why can't she just talk like people talk?
None of them do.
Dr. Dev says Logan's surgery was a success.
That's my favorite part.
It was a success.
It was a success.
What?
Dr. Dev says Logan's surgery was a success.
Oh, I can't.
can.
Now, she's not doing it live, right? So God she laid her. That voice
that,
track down.
That was
and went,
a track, and somebody said, let me just edit that into this piece. Success.
So she nailed
it. Wow.
He, by the way, I don't think this is on the news piece, but the armchair that he used to sit in that little room back mm-hmm. in Mississippi, that's how he got to Bakersfield for the surgery, is they took that armchair and then they screwed it into a van. And he sat in that chair just like he was in his living room 2,000 plus miles across country to get to Bakersfield. Because he's too big. You know, he couldn't just sit in a car seat.
Right.
He's got too much tumor.
As for Logan, he's looking forward to throwing out that old reclining chair and grabbing a Bakersfield taco before he heads home.
All right, start eating immediately.
Note to their tacos up in Bakersfield.
Right. This is the other thing. You're the fattest man in the world, and the first thing you want to do when they cut out that tumor is go get some tacos.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get some food.
Mr. Logan, keep doing what you're doing, sir.
The Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. K-R-O-Q.
What shocking thing did you find out about a coworker you thought you knew? Anthony, welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, I work with this guy who is a complete, he's mean.
He's mean, okay.
Nobody talks to him. Nobody can say good morning to him. He won't say good morning to anyone. He won't have more than a, hey, how you doing conversation.
And most of the time when you have somebody that's working there like that, you learn quickly just to not engage, right?
Yeah, he's very standoffish. Mm-hmm. Nobody really talks to him.
All right.
Last week, actually, he had left his phone open when he went to the restroom. I saw on his phone it was some kind of Facebook link to some kind of food. He runs a program out of his house that gives people in need food.
Whoa. Did you double check it and go, this, am I sure it's his phone? Am I sure it's a charity for homeless people?
Right, but you have to see it in my eyes. In my eyes, this guy's a complete tool.
Right. No, I hear you.
And so I'm confused. And then I actually did ask him about it, and he said, yeah, but he doesn't do it for recognition, and that's why he doesn't tell anybody at our job.
So he only likes people he doesn't know, it sounds like.
Yeah, we know someone like that.
Okay, that makes all kind of sense.
I can totally respect that.
Or he just doesn't like Anthony.
That could be it. Everybody else is fine.
That's always a possibility.
Right now, you know, he may be the next call going, I work with this guy named Anthony. He's such a dick. All right, dude. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the call.
Hey, Jose.
Hey, good morning.
You were surprised by a coworker. What happened?
Well, you know, I've been working with this guy for almost a year, and came to notice that he was a little bit like the quiet type and everything. I was just wondering, like, oh, okay. We just started talking. And little by little, I started realizing, like, there's something wrong with this guy. Like, he's just, you know, he's cool and all, but it was just weird. And then suddenly, we started talking about families and this and that. And then he told me that, he's not married. He doesn't have a kid. And I was wondering, like, why? What's going on? And he just told me that, you know, he just had never been with someone. And that was kind of weird.
How old was he?
He's 30 years old.
So you worked with a 30-year-old that was a virgin.
Yes, and I was asking him, how is that possible? And he told me, I guess he's a Mormon, and Mormons, they don't have any kind of relationship until they get married.
I think there are still a lot of people like that, a lot of people who wait until they get married.
Most of those people don't wait until they're 30 to get married, though.
Yeah, yeah, 30 is unusual.
Yeah, I just thought it was weird. Like, you're 30 years old, you're like the little brother of the 40-year-old virgin guy. Like, what the heck is going on here?
Well, you sound like the kind of guy who probably tried to make him feel bad about it, right, Jose?
Well, no, I actually tried to make him feel good. I took him to Hooters for the first time.
There you go.
Fun.
All right. Well, that's dipping his toe into the water. That's a good start. All right. Thank you for the call, sir. Let's go the opposite direction and go to Redlands Line 5. This is David. He had a guy he worked with, and he found out something surprising as well.
Hey, David.
Hey, man, what's going on, party people?
Yeah, tell us.
I worked with this guy in a very professional office environment, and he's about 5'9", 250 pounds, you know, just chewed bubble gum, not really attractive, doesn't take care of himself. He's married. His wife is much younger. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking one day as he came in all disheveled, and I said, hey, what's going on, man? What happened? He goes, I was at the swinger club. It's like, what?
What?
Yeah. He says, my wife's into women, and I am too, so we go to the swinger club, and we're swingers. And I said, dude, it's impossible. I pulled out and showed pictures. He has pictures of all these women that he's been with his wife, and it's like, there's no way. There's no way this is happening, and he's now called the king.
The king.
Well, sure, yeah.
King of swing.
The king of swing.
King of swing.
So you would have guessed that this guy was lucky to get a woman, much less all the women.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, I'd like that virgin story. This dude would have been, he's 48 years old. I mean, I'd never thought that he was around a woman. And then when he comes up with this story and pictures and videos and all that, wow. Like, you've got to be kidding me.
That is unbelievable. All right, sir, thank you for the call. By the way, Ken writes in, I once found out that the hot Asian chick I shared an office with was a stripper on the weekends in Vegas. I also was at another company. I found out my coworker was one of those girls who satisfies fetishes off of ads on Craigslist for money, and she was also a Wiccan. How's that for a surprising wow. conversation to have? Thank you, Ken, for that. All right, let's try, you want to go to Barry, Riverside, Line 6. Well, we're all having fun about the surprises that your coworkers drop on you.
Hey, Barry.
Hey, good morning, party people.
It's about to get serious. Go ahead.
Hey, I worked with this guy, Emery, for about 5 years in a production plant. And he was married, and I had a girlfriend, and we all hang out at his house, barbecues, and our house, gone out.
Right, so you know him.
Thought we knew him pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And we went on our days off, and I came back to work, and everybody was like, hey, did you hear about Emery? And there was a lot of rumors he was in a movie club.
But it turned out to be something not as bad, right?
Right. But anyway, he decided he was hurting for money, and he flew back to St. Louis one night and went to his parents' house, brutally beat and stabbed, killed both his mom and his dad.
Oh my God.
Then he went on to find he had two brothers and a sister. He found one of the brothers, shot the brother, killed him. Found another brother and another brutal stabbing, shooting. So he killed the parents, the two brothers, and he was looking for the sister, and fortunately wasn't it, for her.
Hey, this is a guy that you had double dated with and been to each other's homes and cooked out.
Exactly. And he flew not even an alias or anything. Flew to St. Louis.
Wow.
Killed everybody, flew back home like there was nothing. And
all right. Well, thank you, I guess. I think all of us now, everybody listening is going to go into work or school today, and they're just going to be giving everybody the side eye like, which one of the people in my life is going to end up being this dude? Thanks for the call.
It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Introducing Rock and Roll.
Here's the headline. Watch controversial preacher who says he can enlarge a man's penis simply by blessing it.
Yeah!
And he blesses it by laying hands on.
Well, I mean, you have to.
So you can do that for a man's penis. He also claims that he can make a woman's breasts bigger.
Here's the here's
by
the
putting
deal.
On hands.
He's from the country of Ghana, which I guess is a place. He is Bishop Daniel Obanim. He says he has been blessed with special powers by God. And there is footage online of him doing exactly what Kevin described. If you don't like the looks of any part of your body, come to me. What do you want that I can't offer? And he is willing to lay hands on you to make the body that you've always dreamed of. We have many questions about how this even works. So let's welcome Bishop Daniel Obanim from Ghana on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Hello, sir.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me on your show.
It is our pleasure. I have to tell you, if what you say is true, you are a miracle worker.
Not am I a miracle worker. It is God. All things are possible in the spiritual realm.
Mm-hmm. And what parts of the body does your power work on? All of them?
What do you need? I got everything. I can make your buttocks bigger. I can make your breasts bigger.
I'll take it.
I can, if you have a small manhood, I can make that bigger.
Okay. Wow.
I just have to lay my hands upon the part of your body that you're not happy with, and then it will be as you wish it to be.
Now, I got to tell you, there have been a lot of preachers and priests and men of the cloth, and no one has ever claimed this. You're the first one.
Yes. I am like God's plastic surgeon.
Sir,
without the surgery.
And degree. How soon after you lay hands on my breasts will I need a bigger bra?
It depends, first of all,
okay.
on what you look like.
Okay.
Okay.
How many treatments I have to give you.
Oh. Okay.
So the first treatment may not work right away. Maybe it's a small, almost almost unnoticeable change.
I see.
Of change so infinitesimal that you may not even see it.
Okay. Right. All right.
But it is changing, believe me.
So then how many treatments would that take?
500, 600 sometimes.
Oh, 600. That seems like a lot.
So every...
But eventually, they will be just what you are wanting them to be.
I see.
So every day, Ali comes to you and you massage her breasts.
That would be the best way to get it done.
Okay.
I see. Huh.
But I really specialize in the penis.
Sure.
That is my bread and butter.
Is it?
It is the foundation of the whole operation, really, is the penis.
Now, I don't know.
A lot of men come to me and they say, my penis is not satisfactory for me or for my mate.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like it to be larger. And I say, well, come here, big boy. And then next thing, I'm here right now in the church.
Oh, I see.
I'm handing out boners left and right.
Huh.
Everybody gets a bigger penis. You get a bigger penis. You get a bigger penis. You get a bigger penis.
He's the Oprah Fauna.
So, Bishop, that's not awkward at all? In your country, it's there's no problem with you in church massaging another man's groin?
It's not awkward. Sometimes it gets awkward.
Oh, no, Bishop.
Like, no, it just got very awkward right
Yes, it did.
Gentlemen, I don't mind telling you, I've never heard a bigger crock of bull crap in my life.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show, the world famous K-Rock.
Our next guest, as the host of The Daily Show, is enjoying more than a million viewers a night right now, weeknights at 11 on Comedy Central. He has also written a fascinating new book that is a bestseller called Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. Trevor Noah steps into the Kevin Bean Show on K-Rock. How are you, Trevor?
Thank you very much for having me.
It's my pleasure. It's great to talk to you. I was just telling Ali off the air before you walked in, I have rarely enjoyed a book as much as I enjoyed your book when I read it this weekend.
Thank you very much.
I mean, I was so surprised because I thought it was going to be about your life, including getting into comedy, getting into television, hosting shows, moving to America, doing The Daily. None of that is in the book.
Yes. Yeah.
So did you get to the end and go, come on?
I was riveted by every minute of reading about your crazy. People see you on TV and they go, well, there's just another journalist in a suit reading the news. They have no idea where you came from or what you've done.
You know what? That was part of the reason I wrote the book, because I realized, in essence, people had no clue about my story. And I always think comedy is about context, you know. So with my audiences that I've grown with, people sort of have an idea of who I am. But for a lot of people, they just saw this random guy pop up on The Daily Show. People were like, who is this person? Why would Jon Stewart choose them? And how does this person live their life? How did they come to be here? And so I realized I need like a crash course on who I am to get me to know the audience and for the audience to know me. And so that's why I wrote the book. I was like, well, here's an introduction to who I am. It's like an origin story.
Yes.
You understand how this person came to be who they are.
How did Bill Gates end up reviewing your book recently
for
Time Magazine?
I have no clue.
What?
But I, there's no.
You have no clue.
There's no, I have no clue. How do you get Bill Gates to do anything?
Well,
I don't know.
We were asking you.
No, but I don't know.
Well, did you see it when someone tweeted it out?
Yeah, the people just said, hey, Bill Gates reviewed your book. And I was like, but which Bill Gates? Because that's the first thing I go, like, maybe there's a Bill Gates book reviewer guy.
Right, at the time.
You don't know.
Sure.
And then I was like, no, the Bill Gates. And then my life, I flashed back to playing games on DOS, on Microsoft DOS, and then going to 3.1 and Millennium. Like, as a little child, if I could go back in time and say to myself, when I'm busy clicking, playing, like, Minesweeper, and go, like, you know the guy who made this? He's going to read your book one day.
And review it.
I would love it. No, honestly, that was. I mean, I don't know how that happened.
Have you met him, Trevor?
No, I haven't.
Okay, when you do, you have to tell the story in the book about how slow it was to close down Windows 95 and tell the audience what that meant, what ended up happening because of that.
Oh, man. So basically, at one point, I was a DJ, at parties. And so what set me apart was I was one of the first DJs who was using a computer. Right?
Okay.
And this is back when it was, you could use your MP3s. And this was long before Serato Scratch and all of these, programs came out. And so I had my programs, I had the computer. And one day I was throwing a street party with my friends, which was illegal. You didn't get permits. You didn't do anything. We just set it up. The police came and they were like, hey, we need to shut this down. And so we're like, okay, we're going to shut it down. The police were really rowdy. And this one cop, he's got a giant gun, a huge rifle. And then he's like, shut it down. Shut the music down, you bastard. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm shutting it down. And so you start shutting it down. And if you remember old Windows, it took forever to shut it down.
I thought
you
were stalling.
The guy is just like, yo, why aren't you shutting it down? Then I'm like, I'm shutting it down. I have to close my programs first. Otherwise, my hard drive is going to crash. You're going to make me lose all my information. Then I'm going to have to boot into safe mode. Please don't stress. And then the guy just lost it. And then he just shut the computer. So, but this was like common. Like, I mean, you guys get stressed about this. Like back home, this was like a normal
that
thing.
That was normal. You're like,
well, it's not them shooting computers, but it's like, yeah, a policeman would shoot at a party. It's like, whatever, you know. It's like, yeah, tear gas and someone shooting at a party. That's like, that's when you go like, all right, the party's over. That's
yeah, there's,
you know,
no,
the
there's no viral video and an investigation
exactly.
in South Africa
it's
when
like,
that happens.
It's like the lights coming on. That's how you know it's time to go home. So that guy effectively ended my DJ career.
Man.
I could have been Calvin Harris right now.
No.
So do we owe him a word of thanks? Are you happy with the way it ended up?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I still would rather be Calvin Harris.
Yeah, that's sure. that's he does point. Have a pretty good life.
He's got a pretty sweet gig.
He really does, yeah.
This is the voice of Trevor Noah here on the Kevin DeBean Show for The Daily Show, again, talking about his book, Born a Crime. And I teased right before you came in that Kevin is going to love your story about how you accidentally burned out a white folks' family's house. And you still in the book, even though, in my opinion, it was 100% your fault, you still are willing to defend it and say it could have happened to anybody,
well,
not you.
Well, let's go over a few things here, Bean.
right?
In my defense, I feel like you are tainting me like a Bill Cosby jury right now.
Oh, wow.
Let's go with this. First of all, I don't think it's imperative that you say it was a white people house, because then what happens is it makes it sound like it was a hate crime.
Okay.
That so has nothing to do with it.
Just
it happened
okay.
to be a house inhabited by white people.
Okay.
This was a coincidence.
All right.
Secondly, I did not burn it down.
Uh-huh.
The house burned down because of my actions.
I mean,
was no intent.
No, I'm going to say that's the same thing.
There was no,
well,
no,
if there's
no.
There's no intent.
There's no intent. I did not burn it down. It burnt down.
Okay.
Because of what I did.
What did you do?
You're saying the same thing.
I involved flammable materials with combustible materials.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I put it all together. And
so you burned the house down?
No, the house burned down.
I'm hearing you say that.
The house burned down. I would like to excuse this juror. Can I excuse this juror? I would like this juror to be excused.
All right, but upon cross-examination, I would like to say, were you in a room that had a mattress on the floor and straw around it, and you were using a magnifying...
Well, the straw was in the mattress.
Okay.
It was one of those old mattresses with the straw inside it.
Okay.
And you're using a magnifying glass to try to burn your initials into furniture.
Yes,
was that what was going on, Mr. Noah?
And remember,
you are under oath.
This was science, in the name of science. Many things have happened in the name of science that have gone wrong, right?
Like tagging with a magnifying glass.
I could have invented a new form of... I was testing solar power. That's what I was doing.
Is that right?
At a young age. And look at us today. Are we not going green? Do you not thank me for this?
You're a hero.
Thank you very much.
I burned down a lot of stuff when I was a kid, but at least I'm willing to own it.
I've burned down things that I'm willing to own. In this instance,
okay.
I did not burn it down. It burned down because of me.
Trevor,
there's no difference.
Do you hear you?
There's zero difference.
Let me ask you this: when you would you say that you grew up in extreme poverty or no?
I don't know. You know what's weird is I always feel like there were people poorer than me in life in different countries and different worlds. But I would agree, for some people living in a world where you had, you know, no indoor toilet, where you had no running water indoors, where you had to eat caterpillars at some point in your life. I mean, some people would call that extreme poverty. I never like to think of it like that, because I go, people around me were doing the same thing. So, mm-hmm.
But aren't they in extreme poverty?
Yeah,
as well,
no, I know. But you know what's weird is perspective. And so I remember the first time I went to Brazil, for instance, and I saw people living in Brazil, and I was like, oh, Lord, this is extreme poverty. I didn't have it this bad. But I guess, relatively speaking, yes, I lived in a place where, you know, but we were all living in extreme poverty. So the one, you know,
it didn't stand out to you. You didn't know any different.
And that's honestly the one upside, which is crazy to say. But because we were going through it together as a community, we didn't feel, you know, you knew that this was life. You knew that you didn't enjoy it, but you didn't think of it particularly as suffering all the time.
Right. Mm.
And so
that makes sense.
And really, that's, you know, that's how I saw the world. I didn't think that I was worse off. I just thought this was normal, and then other people had like running water.
Right. So what does that, and I don't know if I can phrase this question properly, Trevor, but what does that do to you today as a man who's wearing nice suits and lives in a nice apartment and travels in nice airplanes? Does it make you feel bad?
Like, no. It makes me grateful. You know, I mean, that's something I've always appreciated in life, is knowing that you can come from nothing mm-hmm. and achieve everything. I mean, that's what America was always about for me. You know, it's a country where people, you always heard that story. Everyone who came over here with $20 in their pocket, mm-hmm. everyone. And that story is a universal one of hope and aspiration, regardless of where you're from in the world. To know that you can start from nothing and become something. That's the society we want to live in. Otherwise, you're condemned to being the same class that you are when you're born for the rest of your life. So no, when I think of that, I don't feel bad at all because I know we went through the most of it. Like you say, I fly in a nice airplane. But I'm the first person from my family to step foot on an airplane, you know?
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, I drive a nice car, but I'm the first person in my family to ever be able to buy a new car. So when I look at that, I go, this is my grandmother and grandfather's work. This is my mother and father's work. This is everyone in my family's work has now culminated in my generation being able to have a little bit more. I would feel bad if I didn't give back. That's when I would feel bad. So if I went, I do this, and I don't care about people that are in the position that I was in, then I would feel bad.
Hey, everybody, look at my car. You wouldn't make that call?
Exactly. That's not, like, can I tell you what I do? And this was actually, it was Jerry Seinfeld who, like, reinforced that in me. He said to me, you must buy the best car that you can buy and enjoy it. And he said, and you must be the nicest person in the nicest car. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, everyone thinks when you're driving around in a fancy car, the guy in the car is going to be a dick.
Yeah, you're D-bag.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he was like, smile and wave at people. And if kids want to take pictures, let them come in, take pictures. You know, if people want to. And I was like, that's great. Share it with the people. And then, because people don't expect it. You go like, oh, look at this guy driving a fancy car. And then people are like, oh, I know what kind of person he is.
Right.
And when you're like, yo, come and share it. Come and, you know.
And people don't realize, Trevor, and this is why I'm urging so many people to read the book. They don't realize that you spent 2 years literally living in a garage, an auto mechanic garage,
yes.
and sleeping in the back of cars and just hoping somebody would bring in a nice car with some leg room so you'd have a comfortable
Can
place
I
to sleep
you,
that night.
Can I tell you, I dreamed.
That's not a lie.
I dreamed of a car breaking down. Because then I knew it would end up in the garage that I lived in. I was so happy when, like, can I tell you, I still love American cars till this day because they were so oversized.
Yeah.
And I was like, the space that these Americans have in their cars. Because European cars are small.
Right.
Japanese cars are even smaller.
Right, but Americans are fat.
So yeah.
Oh, man.
Fat
American suit. Cars, with the when they would be like, there's a Chevy coming in, I was like, mm-hmm. Lord, I'm going to sleep.
Is that unbelievable?
I'm going to sleep so good
time,
this week.
Yep. Trevor Noah is here, host of The Daily Show. The book is called Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood. Much more with our guest right after this on K-Rock.
The Kevin and Bean Show. It's cool. I'm guessing it's many things. Cool is probably the one thing it's not. It's not. The world famous K-Rock.
Trevor Noah is our guest on The Kevin and Bean Show, host of The Daily Show. Do you and your team get together in a prayer circle every day and thank God for Donald Trump, Trevor?
Oh, wow.
it's got to be the best thing that ever happened to The Daily Show,
you
right?
Know, you know what I think it is? I think we are perfectly suited to Donald Trump. You know what? If anything, like sometimes at the show, like, you know, the writers will be like, this is crazy. I can't handle this. It's so much news. And I go, I'm glad because this is the only news I know how to handle. Because where I come from, our president does the same thing. Like, I promise you now, the parallels between Donald Trump and some African leaders is the craziest thing you've
is
ever
that right?
come
the
across.
Exact same leader.
My president, his family gets rich from the presidency, like all his kids. Donald Trump does the same thing.
Right.
My president came in with, like, you know, corruption scandals and all these, and Donald Trump is starting to do the same thing. Donald Trump fired the head of the FBI. My president just fired the FBI, the entire thing. He was like, why bother with one person? Just get rid of the entire thing. So, I mean, I'm like, oh, man, I'm going through the same thing again. It's just in a different way.
Do you feel American, Trevor? Or do you still feel like a South African
no,
abroad?
No, you know what I feel? I feel world. I know it's a weird thing to say. Like, I'm a South African in the world. So this is, you know what, this is the best way to put it. So what I enjoy about America is a collection of ideas, right? America is an ideal as a place. And so one thing I've always loved about living in the U.S. is when I lived in Pasadena and now when I live in New York is that everyone still brings a piece of their culture with them.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So so I've hung out with, you know, people who, like, I've hung out with Mexicans in California and felt completely like I'm in Mexican culture, but American Mexican mm-hmm. culture. And it's like America becomes the umbrella of everything. So in New York, it's a classic case. I feel like a New Yorker now. I go, yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like a New Yorker. If there's someone on the ground, I will step over them and carry on with my day.
Right.
And
when crazy people talk to you, you're good
oh,
with it.
Oh, you just carry on
it just
walking.
Happens, yeah.
I did not know how that was possible. possible, and now I do. Like, New Yorkers, nothing phases a New Yorker.
You also, though, Trevor, have a particular set of skills. You have a chapter in your book called Chameleon, where your entire life, because you are biracial, you have had to fit in with all sorts of different groups.
Right.
So, I mean,
right.
You've been doing this since you were old enough to know the world existed, right?
And the languages you speak.
Yeah.
That's how you would fit in so many people.
You know what I realized, though? It's a fascinating thing that's really simple. If you try to learn another person's language or even their way of speaking, that person opens up to you in a way that you will not understand. It's the most magical thing ever.
Yeah.
So if
just by trying, you don't even have to.
I promise you now, if you speak to somebody the way they think they sound, they change immediately. They go like, "Oh, we're the same," and then you just notice people open up to you.
I'm going to start leaving out verbs and adjectives and stuff with you.
See, because I have problems with the English language.
Right.
So.
There you go. How many languages can you get by with, Trevor?
Let me think. I can get by with five or six, but I lose them if I'm not in the country long enough. Like, my German has become so rusty now.
Same.
You know? All my African languages I have just stored, and then my friends always mock me when I go home because they go like, "Oh, you've lost everything." And then I spend a week in like intensive boot camp, you know, language boot camp. I speak no English for a week, and then I'm back in the game.
Oh.
And then, yeah, you remember your languages. You know?
Is there a Hollywood South African contingent where you and Charlotte Copley and Charlize Theron, and you guys all get together and reminisce?
Oh, that's funny. I wish. I really, really wish. That
in
would be
trunk
fun.
Of a car?
Just hanging out with Charlize Theron. That would be a life.
I was amazed by how different the food was that you grew up with. I mean, we mentioned the caterpillars, and
yes,
that's a real thing. And the caterpillars, you said, were okay except for the poop, right?
Yeah, that's the only thing that you don't like, is when you squeeze them, they have like a little gooey poop that comes out of
them. Yeah, that's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Tell me about
they've got these like prickly little spines when you chew them. It's not fun.
Yeah. No.
Tell me about eating a smiley.
Oh, a smiley. So that's a common delicacy in South Africa. It's the head of a goat, right?
Sorry?
The head of a goat.
The actual head?
Yeah.
You said the head of a goat.
Yeah, it sounded like head
so
of a goat.
So you know a goat? The head.
No, sir.
Still not with you?
I mean,
no, sir.
We're hearing the words that are coming out of your mouth, but
the impression, though.
Okay, let's start. So,
okay.
Meats of goat, yes.
Uh-huh. Love.
We're in the mix. Ah, okay. Now move up.
Okay. Right.
Neck.
No.
Oh, head. There
head.
We go. Yes.
That was a thumbs up, right? The head of the goat was a good thing, right?
The head of a goat was amazing. Like, for instance, the head of a goat was like people would fight to eat that at like a wedding or you know, if there was a celebration, because you have all the different types of meat on it. And the reason we called it a smiley is because as you would eat it, the face of the goat would start to smile at you. Like a skull,
so
like
terrible.
On the side.
That's
it's
so
smiling.
Terrible. It's not smiling.
It's happy. You're eating its face,
not happy.
It's smiling.
It's not, though.
It was really cool. And you'd eat the different parts. You'd eat the cheek, and you'd eat the lips. And then there's all this like superstition around it. So they go, the lips will help you become well-spoken. The cheeks will make you. The cheeks will make you brave. The eyes will help you see things.
Oh.
The brain will give you knowledge.
Okay, that's just nonsense.
I don't need help with this. So, what did the nose do?
Eat less nose.
I'd eat less.
How is it presented? The head of the goat. Is it presented as?
Oh well, they cut it in half.
Okay.
Yeah, they split it in half. So down the middle of the
this is happening right now.
The head of the goat.
Good morning, everybody.
Yeah. And then you lay it flat, and then you eat. Then you eat the goat's head.
Is it barbecued or is it like boiled?
You can have it any way. You can have it curried. You can have it boiled.
What about a jerk goat?
You can have it. I've never thought of jerk goat.
Well, now you have.
You know what? Okay. That sounds good. But jerk's not South African spice, but maybe we should add that. I like
there you
that.
Go.
Okay.
Jerk goat.
Trevor has to leave, you guys, and I know that makes
not
us
on
all
that note.
Very sad. Born a Crime, Stories from a South African Childhood, and don't miss Trevor Noah as the host of The Daily Show, weeknights at 11 on Comedy Central. I assume you come back next week, right?
Oh, yes, I will be back. I'm currently in Israel, and then after that, I'm going to the Vatican.
And then I will be coming back home. From the best trip ever. The
All
best.
Right.
Greatest ever. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Bean.
Thank you, Trevor.
Best rock.
These DJs are superstars.
Kevin and Bean on K-Rock.
Yeah. I love that song. It is the best of Kevin and Bean on the world famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ FM. Big day in show business. The Emmy Awards. Emmy Award nominations were released this morning. This, of course, for excellence in television, And they announced all the people and shows that were nominated for awards this year. HBO's Westworld and NBC's Saturday Night Live tied for the most nominations in the 2017 Emmy Awards, each earning the most with 22.
Wow.
22 Emmy nominations each. Of course, NBC is loving the fact that Trump is president because Saturday Night Live has never been hotter. And of course, Alec Baldwin's impression and Melissa McCarthy as Sean Spicer has made this past season its most watched in 23 years. So it's a big year for Saturday Night Live. Let's take a look at some of the other nominations. Outstanding Drama. These are all nominated for Best Outstanding Drama Television Show. Better Call Saul, The Crown, The Handmaid's Tale, House of Cards, Stranger Things, This Is Us, and Westworld. Outstanding Comedy. Atlanta, Black-ish, Master of None, Modern Family, Silicon Valley, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and Veep. It's crazy. There's only like two network shows in that list, Black-ish and Modern Family. Everything else is cable or streaming. Best Lead Actor in a Drama. The nominees are Sterling K. Brown for This Is Us, Anthony Hopkins for Westworld, Matthew Rice for The Americans, Liev Schreiber for Ray Donovan. Love him. Kevin Spacey, House of Cards, and Milo Ventimiglia for This Is Us. Lead Actress in a Drama, Viola Davis for How to Get Away with Murder. Claire Foy for The Crown, Elizabeth Moss, The Handmaid's Tale, Kerry Russell for Americans, Evan Rachel Wood for Westworld, and Robin Wright in House of Cards. Lead actor in a comedy, Anthony Anderson for his work in Black-ish, Aziz Ansari for Master of None, Zach Galifianakis for Baskets, Donald Glover for Atlanta, William H. Macy for Shameless, and Jeffrey Tambor will likely win
again
for Transparent. Lead actress in a comedy, Pamela Adlon for Better Things. I don't know her. I don't know. Is there a show called Better Things? I don't know anything about any of those words.
On FX.
All right, if you say so. Jane Fonda for Gracie and Frankie, or whatever the hell that show is called. Allison Janney for Mom. Ellie Kemper, the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. She's so good on that show. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Mother Effers, for Veep. Tracy Ellis Ross, who's great on Black-ish. Lily Tomlin for Grace and Frankie. Oh, boy, there's so many categories. I'm trying to just give you the biggest ones here. How about lead actress in a limited series or movie? Carrie Coon for Fargo. She was terrific in that. Felicity Huffman for American Crime. Nicole Kidman for Big Little Lies. Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon, both nominated for their work in Feud on FX, which was terrific. And Reese Witherspoon for Big Little Lies as well. For a limited series, these are nominees. Big Little Lies, Fargo, Feud, Genius, and The Night Of. All great shows. Let's take a look at supporting actor in a drama. Jonathan Banks for Better Call Saul. John Lithgow for The Crown. Mandy Patinkin for Homeland. David Harbour for Stranger Things. Michael Kelly for House of Cards. Ron Cephas Jones for This Is Us. And Jeffrey Wright for Westworld. So many great, talented people nominated for awards this year. And as I mentioned, the biggest number of awards is 22 nominations for those awards going to Saturday Night Live and for Westworld. So we'll keep you posted as they continue to roll in. Speaking of record holders, Gangnam Style. Remember Gangnam Style, right? Psy's Gangnam Style?
Yeah.
Wait, let's play a little bit of that for people who don't remember, because I love that song.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam
Style. Oppan Gangnam Style. That at one time was the most viewed video on YouTube of all time. Well, it's just been pushed off the top of the mountain. Wiz Khalifa has done that with See You Again, featuring Charlie Puth. It's the new champ. And if you're not familiar, here's a little taste of that song. How can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I would do, you were standing there by my side. And now you're going to be with me for the last ride. It's been a long day. Number one on YouTube, most watched video. I'm surprised. I didn't think anyone was ever going to touch Gangnam Style, but what do you know? While we're talking music, Kesha. You remember Kesha? She was in a very public feud with Dr. Luke, her producer, saying that she was mistreated, assaulted verbally, sexually, emotionally, wanted out of her deal with Dr. Luke, didn't want to collaborate with him any longer. Very ugly legal battle for the past 3 years. Well, she's got new music out. And then she was so much a part of what was happening publicly and in the courtroom that I almost completely forgot how utterly talentless she is. This song is it's pretty craptastic. It's another posing sort of posturing, oh, I'm a badass song. It's like, that's what I'm talking about. Remember that one, that TikTok song she had? It's just, it's dance music at its worst. But it's new. And this comes out on her new album, Rainbow, that comes out on August 11th. Anyway, here's the song is called Woman, but it pretty much the lyrics are just basically mother effer. So here's Hope and Beer Mug. Did some editing. And
hand on the dump button.
And we can play this. Here you go. Mother effing woman, she pays her own bills.
Yeah.
Diamond rings, and cars. She's the worst. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Cody Bellinger from the Los Angeles Dodgers is 22 years old today. Ken Jeong, Dr. Ken, love him, 48 years old today. Tom Kenny, SpongeBob SquarePants, is 55 years old. Cheech Marin is 71. Harrison Ford is 75. And Patrick Stewart, make it so, number one, is 77 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show of his beat.
The Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
K-R-O-Q.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.